Paul.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. I'm not a fan of April Fool's Day. I've never really been a fan of April Fool's Day. All right, maybe when I was younger, it was kind of cute. And as I got older, because in this business, you get news and you don't know what's true, what's not sometimes. And sometimes it's silly, right? Sometimes you see something on social media that says, like, the Boston Red Sox are leaving Massachusetts to relocate to Des Moines, Iowa. And you go, ah, that's stupid. But cute in its sort of theory. Right, or maybe you hear some player has been traded to somewhere else, and you're like, ah, that could be true, but I doubt it. It's April 1st. But then you get a day like yesterday, and yesterday was one of those news days where Roy Williams announced his retirement. And I don't know about you, but I immediately thought, this is probably not right. This is probably an April Fool's joke. Look at the calendar. It says April 1st. It has one of those elements where it could be true that he's 70 years old. He's won a number of national titles. He didn't come off a very good season. But then at the same time, you think, ah, the calendar tells me that this news is false. It can't possibly be right. Well, it was true. Roy Williams announcing his retirement at North Carolina, leaving the Tar Heels, and now at 70 is going to go on to whatever chapter of his life has for him. He has been part of two massive programs of Kansas and UNC, where he has established a Hall of Fame career at both places. Right at Kansas alone, the 15 years at Kansas, what he did there was remarkable. Taking the Jayhawks, who were on off of probation, and getting them into Final Fours, and then finally winning the elusive national championship in 2005 with the UNC, and then going on to win two more. But we'll talk about his time at North Carolina, because there might be a few more reasons why he is leaving rather than being at a point in his life that maybe 70 is time to hang it up. If circumstances were different, would he still be the coach at North Carolina today? We'll discuss that. I don't want to read too much into it. It's his life. It's his mind. But I'm wondering about the changing nature of college basketball and how much that had affected the decision of Roy Williams to finally leave Chapel Hill. That and more as Major League Baseball had its opening day, and we'll continue to look at the Final Four. It looks like it's Gonzaga's to lose. We continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, receive a $5 rebate by trading up any non-contact thermometer towards an Exogen purchased at any retailer. COVID vaccines are proven effective by peer-reviewed published studies. Exogen temporal scanners are the only home forehead thermometer proven accurate by peer-reviewed published studies. Details at Exogen.com, where accuracy matters. So as I was saying, yesterday's news that Roy Williams leaving North Carolina, yeah, it had an April Fool's-like feel to it, because and it would have been a good one. It's a believable thing, right? It wasn't something that was so outlandish you would go, oh, that's stupid. I know what the day is today. That's ridiculous. No, that was believable, but I'm sure a lot of people at first thought this was an April Fool's joke, but it was not. Roy Williams is actually leaving North Carolina, and he leaves an amazing college basketball legacy. This is a guy that started out as a high school coach in North Carolina, got on Dean Smith's bench, helped recruit Michael Jordan, was part of the 82 championship team in which Jordan hit the shot. He hung around with Dean Smith for a number of years before finally being tapped on the shoulder to be the head coach at Kansas. Now, what a huge job that was at the time, because there were a couple of things that were going on at Kansas at the time. One, Larry Brown had just led them to a national championship in 1988, Danny and the Miracles with Danny Manning. But they were also going on probation, and Kansas is still at the time was a huge program. It still is today. It was back then. You know, James Naismith coached there. But you're going to bring an assistant, a Dean Smith assistant, to be running one of the blue blood programs out of probation, right? And probation is a really tricky thing to navigate. People don't usually want to go to programs that are on probation. And I'll be honest with you, they don't really want to go to programs after probation, because when you get there, you're cleaning up a mess. You're trying to rebuild the whole program up again. You're trying to implement a style. You're trying to get kids convinced to go there. You can be set back a lot. No matter who you are, you can be set back a lot when you are coming off probation. And Roy Williams navigated that brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. And you think about the number of players that have come through the Kansas program in his 15 years in Lawrence. I mean, Paul Pierce is one of them. Jacques Vaughn is one of the other. I mean, Rex Walters, you can list a whole bunch of them. But he implemented a style of play at Kansas that had the Jayhawks back on top, and back on top very quickly. They went to a national championship game in 91. Duke won that national championship game, their first title, Duke's first title with Mike Krzyzewski. But then Kansas kept rolling along. They went right back at it in 1993 at the Superdome. That was the Chris Webber timeout game. But they were a part of that Final Four in that one. He never got a national title at Kansas. He came close. They had that good fought battle against Syracuse in 2003. And after that, he left for North Carolina. But he established something so good in Lawrence. I mean, you can look at the way Kansas basketball, not just Kansas basketball like Jayhawk basketball, I mean like the state, were implementing the same things Roy Williams was implementing with his Jayhawk program. Everybody wanted to run. Everybody wanted to do this up-tempo style. And that was Roy Williams' legacy on the state. He announced that he was staying. 2000, Bill Guthridge retired, and from North Carolina, they were looking for a coach. Roy Williams' name was being brought up for it. He decided to stay at Kansas. Now, I will tell you this. I remember, because I talked about this with Lane Kiffin when he left Tennessee years and years ago. When your dream job comes available, you better go get it, because you never know if it's going to come back again. And especially if that school lands the right guy, right? I mean, if you turn down your dream job in college sports, be careful, because the guy that they do hire for that position, he might have it for 20 years and you may not get it again. That must have been a heart-wrenching decision in 2000 for Roy Williams to decide to stay at Lawrence, right? And yeah, maybe it was easier with more money or whatever, who knows? But I think just all things being equal, for him to be a North Carolina guy on the North Carolina bench with one of the greatest coaching minds of all time in Dean Smith, to have been a part of that legacy in the 80s, and then to establish his own legacy at Kansas, to have that opportunity pop up, it must have been heart-wrenching for him to say to North Carolina, no, I can't do it. I'm staying here in Kansas. And everybody rejoiced in Lawrence. Everybody rejoiced, because what he was doing was he had gotten Kansas to that level where they were going to be national championship contenders. They were winning their conference. They were going to the tournament. They were going deep into the tournament. And one day they were going to win it all. You could feel it. He was recruiting well, top classes. One day that was going to crack and Kansas was going to win it all. And in 2003, he got a chance to take that team to the national championship game, and they lost that game to Syracuse. And afterwards, Bonnie Bernstein at CBS asked him about the North Carolina job, which was available when they were getting rid of, it was Matt Doherty at the time. He asked him, and he cursed on the air, actually. He kind of had to bleep it out, because he was not happy with the question when his team was really suffering the loss of losing the national championship game. His mind was on his team. He didn't want to talk about North Carolina, but eventually he did. And he left Kansas after that game to become the head coach of the Tar Heels and to take his program to where that has gone three national championships, and won it pretty quickly. He won it in 2005 in beating Illinois. And the other thing too, and sort of lost in the conversation about college basketball history. You know, we talk about Virginia losing to UMBC, and then getting winning the title the next year, sort of erasing that. Well, this is not obviously that, but remember when they lost to Villanova in the 2016 title game? Remember Villanova hit the buzzer beater after North Carolina had taken the lead? late in the game, and then Villanova hit the buzzer. Chris Jenkins hit the shot, and that sent the Wildcats to the national winning the national championship. The very next year in 2017, he beat a one-loss Gonzaga team. They beat a one-loss Gonzaga team to win the championship again. He had a team back in 2009, that was Gonzaga-like today. A team that was winning everything by double digit, Tyler Hansbrough. They were killing everybody, and they beat Michigan State in the championship game in Michigan at Ford Field. I mean, so those were the three titles at North Carolina. He is regarded as one of the most generous, nicest, most understanding coach. Yes, he's hard at times, but he is beloved by his players. But there's a change in the landscape now in college basketball. And we're going to get more into this as the show occurs, because I think it's a little bit more than just Roy Williams here. There are coaches right now who have been a part of my basketball life, probably your basketball life, for a very, very long time, that are on the back end of their career, right? One day, Mike Krzyzewski, and sooner than later, is going to call it quits. Jim Boeheim, sooner than later, is going to call it quits. And Rick Pitino, who's back into the college game, is going to be calling it quits in the next decade or so. John Calipari is on that trajectory. Guys in their 60s who have been around a really long time. But it might be hastened, and it might be quick, with the way college basketball is going now. And I personally think these changes are for the good. I do. I think more player empowerment is good. I am on that side of the political fence in the sports political world. I am more player advocate than I am coach and school advocate. I think for too many years, the schools had been more dictatorial in how players move about and do what's best for them when nobody seems to care about their best interest. Now players are getting a little bit of that power back. I am for that, even if it creates a mess, even if it creates guys going to the highest bidder and transferring and all of those things. I don't want to read into Roy Williams's mind, but the reality of it is this playing a huge factor? He did not elaborate on that. He simply said he knew he would need to leave if he felt like he wasn't the right man for the job. This North Carolina team this year was plagued by COVID. They lost in the first round to Wisconsin. It wasn't a typical North Carolina year. They weren't considered one of the power teams in college basketball. They did make the tournament, albeit a first-round exit. That's nothing to sneeze at, but Williams is probably looking around going, this is going to get harder and harder and harder and more frustrating. And to be honest with you, I don't think I want to play in this game anymore. I don't think I want to be part of this anymore. But again, that's me reading him. I have no insight on his mindset on all this. It could simply be he's 70, he's done, he's worn out. That's it. And it takes a lot out of you, and he wants to enjoy his retired life. Maybe that's as simple as that. But there is something about his press conference that made me think it's more. It didn't feel like a guy that was saying, I have done everything. I have completed this chapter in my life. I am ready to move on. I had a feeling there was a little more to that. And a lot of people are making that sort of connection between the way college basketball is changing and Roy Williams being this very kind of old school, traditional, this is the way it always is, why does it have to change me, wait on me kind of thing, and bringing those worlds together. I think he also probably worries about, in this changing culture, what do I want my last few years to be? What do I want that legacy to be? He's, in college sports world, he's not really that far off from winning the national title. 2017, because of COVID, may feel like 100 years ago. But on the calendar, it's not really. When you think about how hard it is to win a national championship, it's really difficult. I mean, he didn't at Kansas, and he had excellent basketball teams at Kansas, and he didn't do it there. A couple of years, 4 years ago, winning a national title, his legacy wasn't going to be, well, at the last couple of years, man, he's just trash. No, no matter when he would have left, we would still go, he's a Hall of Fame coach, one of the greatest to ever do it. We'll go over some of the names that could be replacing him at North Carolina. It's one of the premier jobs in college athletics. Forget basketball. UNC, you know, North Carolina basketball coach is right up there with Notre Dame football coach. It's right up there with a lot of other openings in sports that are just different than the other openings. But when we come back, we're going to talk about Major League Baseball. It's opening day yesterday. Some of the bizarreness that occurred, including COVID going, don't forget about me. I'm still right here, ready to disrupt your season. We'll continue along. We'll also have a Final Four preview. It's the Zags tournament to lose, or is it? We'll get to that as well. So stick around this hour as we continue. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. Kick off the season right with fresh batteries for your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, purchase any Superstart lawn and garden battery. Get a $10 gift card after a mail-in rebate. Don't miss out on the savings. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I get to mow the lawn for the first time this season this weekend. I couldn't mow it with my knee under my rehab from after my knee surgery, so I had to pay somebody to do it. When I was a kid, I got $5 to mow somebody's lawn. I paid $40 to have somebody mow my lawn last week.
But did they do a good job?
Oh, it was great. It was great. It's a lawn service. It's not a kid. So, I mean, professional, everything was edged great and it just looked fantastic.
Got to pay for the gas money for him to get there.
Yeah. Part of me was like
his lunch break.
I like mowing my lawn. I'm one of those guys that just digs it. I just dig mowing my lawn, But at the same time, I looked at his job and went, man, I don't know, $40 a week, is that terrible?
I know. I'm making a bold decision. Under a watchful eye, though, but I was going to have my 13-year-old mow the lawn.
It's the best
tomorrow.
Feeling in the world. Like when your son is like, you get to mow, he mows the lawn. It's awesome.
Yeah. Now I know I got to start it for him because I know he probably would break it.
Sure.
But once he gets going, I'm going to be like, hey, just go for it, man.
I bet my father couldn't wait for me and my brother to mow the lawn. He was probably like, oh, yes. Boys is why I have them. Here you go, kids. This is how this lawnmower works. Isn't this exciting? Like, my son, when he was young, he couldn't wait to mow the lawn. Like, he was like, can I mow the lawn? Can I mow the lawn? He loved it. He had never done it before. Then he did it. And then he did. After a while, it got like, mow the lawn. He's like, how about Tuesday? I'm like, no, how about today? Right?
It's like. Well, see, that's why, I told him, I said, listen, we're going to do a lot of yard work because we have a free weekend. There's no sports this weekend for us. So we're actually home. But also, it's Easter on Sunday. We got, family coming over. And we have, I don't know if you guys have these or if these are popular anywhere else, but confetti eggs?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen them. I don't use them, but I know
They're a pain in the you-know-what.
Yeah, they are.
But I said, I have my niece coming over. She's going to have a lot of fun. You guys always have a lot of fun. We got way too many, and the Easter Bunny is just going to drop off a bunch of confetti eggs for us to throw at each other. But we got to mow the lawn.
Yeah.
Because, and for whatever reason, my kids still cannot do this, even though I have a scoop for it. But I got to go pick up the dog's mess in the backyard because they can't. I don't know. Did your son ever do that? Can I get him to do that?
Yeah, he did. Oh, both of them did. That was the deal of getting a dog. I was like, we're getting a dog, but you guys are cleaning up after the dog.
Yeah. But I told him, I said, I will do that. You mow the lawn.
Awesome.
Because then I got to do other stuff to
have kids.
Kind of fix up our backyard because it was a long winter.
We have to organize our garage. I ain't doing it until my kid comes back from college.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not doing it alone. Are you kidding?
See, that's something I got to do now because if I wait too long, then it gets too hot.
I got to keep it that way for a month until he gets home. The first thing we do is, hey, guess what we're doing? Taking this stuff out and reorganizing it all. All right, so Major League Baseball opening day yesterday. It was snowing in Cleveland, right? It was.
Yep.
Look, Major League Baseball, I don't know why they do this. It's like, why take a chance in the season openers with snow? Why are you scheduling games in like New York and places where it could be cold at the beginning of the season? Why don't you give it a little bit of a time to sort of let Mother Nature kick in the spring? Where sometimes we open these seasons in these places and it's like, it's a balmy 37 degrees here at Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, Camden Yards, all these northern places, progressive field, Wrigley Field. And it's April. The thing about April is it gets warmer quickly. Like as the days progress, like the temperature just sort of kicks in. Spring just can't contain itself. And so by the 10th of April, we're usually pretty good. And yet every year Major League Baseball schedules these games and you see guys in winter hats and jackets and it's cold out there. Move the games, put the games in like southern part of the United States and West Coast in the first couple of games. And then break out the spring for home openers later in the month.
Yeah, like for the Dodgers, all right? They don't have their home openers not until like another week and a half.
Yeah, what a gamble to be in Colorado on April 1st. Like it could have been 6 feet of snow outside. You never know with that place. It could be 75. That was the beauty of living in Denver all the years. You never know what the weather was going to be like. Could be 70. Could be buried in snow. You don't know. But I guarantee you in L.A., it would have been a balmy, nice 78, 79 degrees there.
Yes, it would. It would have been fine. Right?
You could almost count it by the Farmer's Almanac. Speaking of the Dodgers, what a cool thing, not really cool for you, but a cool thing for baseball to have this bizarre play on Cody Bellinger.
God, did it feel very Metsy like
very
play.
Metsy, yes.
I didn't enjoy it too much. I don't want my team to take that role. You know, because the Mets aren't going to be doing Metsy things anymore, which makes me sad. I don't need the Dodgers to say, hey, you know what? Don't worry. We got you.
Right. So for those of you who don't know, yesterday they were playing the Rockies, and Cody Bellinger hit a ball that went over the fence. It was a home run. But Rockies outfielder Ramil Tapia didn't catch the ball. So here's what happened in the game in Denver when people thought Bellinger's ball was caught by Tapia, but it actually was a home run. Oh, chaos just ensued.
Bellinger hits a high fly ball, left center field, back towards the wall. It is gone! Just over the wall, a two-run home run. Tapia might have gotten a piece, but it still escaped the yard. What is Bellinger waiting on? All kinds of confusion going here. And now the umpires are coming together to discuss it. Dave Roberts is coming out of the dugout.
It's a home run.
I wonder if Cody crossed Justin Turner.
If that happens,
yep,
the runner that does the passing is out. So yep. Bellinger's going to be out. From that point, the play continues. Wow. In and out of his glove. And then Bellinger passes Turner on the bases. So Bellinger's going to be the second out of the inning. Turner will be wherever he wound up when the play ended.
He ended up going home. He ended up scoring. So it was a weird situation in Colorado. So as the announcers, was that the Dodger Radio Network?
Yes.
Okay, Dodger Radio Network. So basically, Bellinger hits a home run, right? The announcers knew it was a home run. People knew it was a home run. Tapia obviously knew it was a home run because he knew he didn't catch it. But Turner did not. He was on first, and he did not know it was a home run. He was going back to first base thinking the ball was caught. Bellinger had passed him, so Bellinger's out. But they ruled it a home run, and Turner was able to, you know, they gave Turner, yeah, like, you get to score.
They ruled it an RBI single.
Right, so it was an RBI single. So that was the confusion of one of the big confusing plays of Major League Baseball yesterday. Too bad. It's one of those, if I was the announcer, I would have given up. I would have been like, okay, well, looks like Bellinger's out. But then Turner, I guess he gets to, I don't know, what does he do? And then you just wait for the score to come out and tell you.
You know, was anybody yelling at him? Was Bellinger saying, turn around, turn around, anyone? Because, I mean, Turner, he had rounded second. Thought the ball was caught and then tore off back to first, as he should. There's only one out in the inning.
If he's not getting any word from anybody what to do, like you get to go, and he's not noticing a signal from the umpire or anything, he's got to protect himself on the base pad, so he doesn't want to be stranded out there thinking it's a home run.
Well, they want to make it a double play. It ends the inning.
Right? That's right. So you got to go back. But there's obviously, because this isn't the first time that a player in the outfield may or may not have caught a home run with a guy on first base in the history of baseball, and yet somehow the worst thing that could have happened in that situation happened.
So bizarre. So, I've never seen that happen.
So weird. So weird.
Like it's one of those things, we've known the rule existed all these years. I don't think we've ever seen it.
Yep. All right, coming up, Final Four is this weekend. Is it Gonzaga's tournament to lose? Well, we'll see. We'll talk about that next as we continue with Sports Map Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the Final Four set in Indianapolis. Two games on the docket. It's Gonzaga, UCLA, Baylor, and Houston. Winners meet for the national title. Is it likely, because three of the four teams have never won a men's basketball championship, that somebody is going to be cutting down the nets for the first time in school history? Or will UCLA be adding to its incredible lore? They practically invented this tournament. Are you kidding me? I mean, they practically invented it. But Gonzaga, Baylor, and Houston, none of them have ever won a national championship in men's basketball. So it's likely, 75% chance, probably more given the power of Gonzaga and Baylor, that those two teams, one of those two teams, will be cutting down the nets on Monday. But we'll discuss all of that coming up. But you know what? It's time to talk about Tubbo Towels. Because Tubbo Towels are the heavy-duty cleaning wipes that have over 30,000 five-star reviews. And it's for a very, very good reason. This stuff gets the job done. Grease, oil, tar, paint, chalks, silicones, brake dust, ink, glue, wax, food, drink stains, whatever the mess, Tubbo Towels is going to take care of it. Now, you can find them at O'Reilly's. You can find them at AutoZone, Advanced Auto, Napa, Pep Boys. And here's the great thing about them. Sometimes you get those heavy-duty wipes, but they kind of leave something on your hands. But these towels, they have got some aloe vera in them, some vitamin E, lanolin, so it's good on the hands, and yet tough on the messes. And I love them because they're in the vapor lock lid. It snaps shut. They don't dry out because I bought similar products. I leave them in my garage, and then I go, oh yeah, let me go wipe down this. And I open it up, and it's a bunch of dry towels that are useless, and I got to chuck them away. These are going to stay moist, and they're going to get the job done on your car, your messes. You're going to use them in the garage. You're going to clean up, but you bring them in the house too, because they can take care of those messes in your house as well. Tubbo Towels, again, available at O'Reilly, AutoZone, Advance, Napa, Pep Boys. Check them out, and you will not be disappointed. Use them on your car, appliances, paint rollers, fabrics, carpets, lawns, you name it. You got a mess. Tubbo Towels has got the job for you. All right. So the Final Four in Indianapolis. Is this Gonzaga's tournament to lose? Would it be considered a letdown if, just not a letdown from the standpoint of, oh man, the whole country is rooting for Gonzaga. Meaning all of what Gonzaga is bringing into this tournament, if they don't win it, will it feel like, not an upset, but feel like a journey that is very disappointing. We just talked about Roy Williams. We just talked about his 15 years at Kansas. He never won a national title at Kansas, but he got to the Final Four a number of times. He got to the championship game twice. He lost to Duke, and he lost to Syracuse. And he won in 91, the other in 2003. So he had this level of consistency at Kansas, but in the end, he couldn't cut down the nets. He couldn't win the title. It's a very hard tournament to win. We have been saying, Gonzaga, for the last few years, when are you going to win it all? When are you going to go to this thing and take it in and cut it down? The Gonzaga team that lost to the Roy Williams UNC team in 2017 was a one-loss team. This year is an unbeaten team. This one is trying to etch its name into the history books. Becoming, you know, Indiana won it undefeated in 76, and Gonzaga is trying to match them in wins, and they would do so with a victory throughout this tournament, the next two wins. I don't want to go down that road because I think Baylor is one of those teams that has been with Gonzaga neck and neck this season in terms of how good Baylor is. Baylor is a team very much like the Zags. They can beat you in a number of ways. They've got strong talent amongst three guys that can take over a game, very similar to what Mark Few has in Spokane. It was Gonzaga being number one, Baylor was number two, they lost it a little bit to Michigan, got it back. It's been a 1-2 horse race in the rankings for the whole season. Would one of us be really blown away if Baylor would have cut down the nets and win this championship? I don't think so. UCLA, yes. Again, UCLA is not a Cinderella. Like, you know, we kind of know about them. We know where they are. We know what conference they play in. But you go from a play-in game. You go in a play-in game for a reason. And now it's
UCLA is the perfect example of what this tournament does to teams time and time again, which is find a way to get in. And if you can be hot, if you can find the thing that's working, that's clicking, use it to your advantage and make a run. We have always accepted in the postseason that whatever journey teams have to take to win the title, that's the journey. We don't question it. We don't go, well, that wasn't deserved. If the process is laid out in front of you, take advantage of that process in the best way you possibly can. If you're an 8 seed in the NBA and it requires you to win best of 7-game series without the home court advantage, that's the path that's been laid before you. Go do it. If you are in college football and the path is play well enough that a bunch of people in a room somewhere will pick you to be one of the 4 participants, then go do that. In college basketball, get the committee to know who you are. Get the committee to be impressed with you in whatever capacity it takes to get in. And if that means we're not really sure about you, but you get to go play the first game of this tournament and show us that you deserve to be in the 64, then that's what you got to do. And again, I never understand whenever I do an authoritative type of figure, I kind of throw in a Southern accent, like some sort of boss hog angle.
I think it's your upbringing.
It might be.
You're just used to that was who
right?
All the bad guys were, right?
Like, I never say, you know, you've got to make sure that you win enough games and then you're impressing us to be in the tournament, so go to the play-in game and play Michigan State. It's every time I do an authoritative figure, it's, you got to go to the play-in game and play Michigan State. I don't know why I go with that angle. I don't know. Maybe you're right. It might be my Dukes of Hazzard upbringing. Nevertheless, that's what UCLA was given, right? That's the task that was on the table. You want to play? Go beat Michigan State. Then you get to come into the tournament. And I know I've said this before, but it is funny, isn't it? Part of the reason this tournament is successful, that the people love it, is because of the bracket, right? We love filling out the bracket. We love participating in office pools. We love it when Susie, the secretary, doesn't know anything about college basketball and she fills out one too, or your kids fill it out. Grandma's filling one out. It's awesome. It's something that's so unifying in sports, where you bring in a whole bunch of different people who don't care about basketball, don't even know the mascots, couldn't name the players, couldn't name the coaches, don't even care. They just are like, that little number is better than that big number, and go for it, right? Fill this out. And the NCAA tournament says, we know that. We know you love filling out brackets. In fact, you can go to our website and you can print one out. You know, and you can even go to our website and we'll even help you figure out your bracket. But these 4 games, they don't even really count because you don't even have to put your bracket in before these guys play. Yeah, it's kind of like punishment. Like, you don't even get to be in the party until you show that you deserve an invitation. That's what they handed UCLA. And 10 years ago, they did the exact same thing to VCU with Shaka Smart. They said, you know, you're not really part of this, but if you win this little one game, you can join. You can join the fun. And VCU did, and they made a run to the Final Four. And now UCLA has done the exact same thing. But I got a feeling in this. I just think this is very similar to what I was saying earlier. The North Carolina team of 2009 that was just so good, so talented, hard to beat for 40 minutes of basketball. I think this Gonzaga team is that team, right? But I said that in 2015 with Kentucky. Kentucky was unbeaten, and Wisconsin took them down. Do I think UCLA beats Gonzaga? No, but I think Baylor could. But in the end, I think Mark Few wins this thing. And I hate to be that guy because I don't like going chalk per se. I like to throw in a little angle. I like to say, oh, don't sleep on Houston. But I can't. I can't. This Gonzaga team is too powerful.
No, and they really are. I mean, at the beginning of the tournament, even before the tournament, I said there's just no way. I just didn't think Gonzaga was one of those teams that could go undefeated all the way through.
Yeah, it's hard.
But it's also, you know, I mean, yes, they have a really good team, but I think it's also how the tournament played out for them.
With in terms of,
you know,
just
where I mean, I don't want to take anything away from UCLA because they definitely, you know, they beat a number 2, they beat a number 1. But it almost felt like, you know, Gonzaga did have an easier path to being undefeated than some other teams in the past.
Oh, it's no doubt. I mean, the funny thing was is that even before the tournament started, people were saying, look at the committee. They gave Gonzaga one of the easiest roads. Teams they had already beaten were in their region. But they didn't have to play any of those teams, right? Those teams were getting knocked out by other teams. So Gonzaga's path even grew even easier, if you will. You know, we talked about Houston yesterday, and Houston is a two seed that had to go through double digit seeds all the way through, and nobody is asking them to apologize for that. And I think you're right. I don't think Mark Few has anything, you know, he has got whatever impressiveness you got, despite the fact that he didn't have to go through some of the bigger teams in his region, are still impressive enough to make me think that in the end, if they just stick to what they do, they're going to win. Now, the big equalizer in all this is defensive-oriented teams. If you catch a team defensively where all of a sudden they can't hit shots, Michigan wins this game against UCLA if Franz Wagner hits some shots, right? He was 1-for-10. If he goes 5-for-10, they likely win that game. But UCLA's defense was one of the reasons Wagner was out of rhythm. It's possible that Mick Cronin is a defensive genius, that he does create something where Drew Timmy isn't as effective against his guys as Drew Timmy was effective against Evan Mobley. But at the same time, you got to understand that there are so many weapons Gonzaga throws at you. You want to run, they'll run. You want to play this half-court slowdown, use as much of the shot clock as possible to score, they'll beat you there too. There are plenty of teams who have tried that against them. And they get out of that, next thing you know, you're down 20 and you better get moving with the basketball. If you do what teams have to do in these kind of wins, you got to hit every shot you take, you got to take up some time on the clock, and you got to disrupt the rhythm of a team that wants to blow you out of the gym. That's possible, but it's easier said than done. Those are the things that Mick Cronin has got to put together for the I just don't see him doing that. I just don't see that happening. Look, this UCLA team has beaten a two seed in Alabama and a one seed in Michigan. So they can win these games against very good basketball teams. Very, very good basketball teams. Alabama was one of my favorites to win the whole thing. If I said Nate Oates and that team can hit threes and play in the inside game, they're a threat to anybody, even Gonzaga. But UCLA took care of them. UCLA took care of Michigan, another team I thought could win it all. So I was 0-for-2. But I think Gonzaga is too strong. I just do. I'll be more than happy on Monday to give the Bruins their praise.
I don't know if I like it, but I at this point now I don't see Gonzaga taking a step back.
We're speaking to Joseph Duarte, a Houston Chronicle, yesterday on the Cougars, and I made this point, and he agreed with it, which was good for me because I was hoping if he didn't agree with me, I would have been like, oh, that's embarrassing. That doesn't it feel like Baylor and Houston, that the gap is wider than a 1-2 matchup? Doesn't it, like, if this is a 1-2 matchup in the Final Four should be pick 'em. Maybe, a couple of points, right? You should say Houston is just as capable of winning that game as a 2 seed as Baylor is winning it as a 1 seed. But it feels like the difference between Baylor and Houston is very wide. Baylor has been in the public eye as a basketball power the entire season, since the rankings first came out. Where Houston played some games, beat Texas Tech in the non-conference matchups, started winning games, started getting some national attention. People started focusing on them. Oh, my God, they're winning, and they keep winning, and they keep winning, and they keep climbing, and keep climbing, and keep climbing. Baylor never climbed. Baylor was set on top of the rankings with Gonzaga at the beginning of the season and then just sort of dipped down a little bit when they went through the COVID phase. So it just feels like in that matchup, the two teams are too wide. But again, you're talking about a team that plays good defense and will out-rebound you, and those are keys to winning any game, any time, and that's Houston. So those are the matchups for the Final Four. It is Tony D, Ron Culver. Thanks for joining us, Sports Map Radio, as we continue along. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. And when we come back, just a quick reminder that COVID is still in sports. Next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, along Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Coming up next hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll also talk about Roy Williams some more as he leaves North Carolina. Who could possibly replace him? We'll continue along on our Final Four preview. But one thought, you know, COVID-19 is starting. We're getting a little bit back to normal, getting more and more back to normal every day. I was very disappointed yesterday that COVID reared its ugly head again in postponing the Mets and Nationals game yesterday. It's like right off the bat, it went, this is one of your premier matchups, right? It's like Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom. It's the Mets with Francisco Lindor getting the big contract, being now a player in the National League in terms of considering them to win the pennant. And COVID goes, yeah, we're still around. I'm hoping this doesn't make a mess of the baseball season. I know, I think it won't. I think the way they navigated last year was really good. I think with the games the way they're laid out now, it's much easier to get these in. It's much easier to sort of, all right, when you come back to play here, we'll do a doubleheader to make up a game or two. Last year it was ridiculous. Last year was insane. I didn't know how the St. Louis Cardinals, who missed like 2 weeks of the season, were ever going to get 60 games. And I think they ended up with 57, which is way more than I thought they were going to finish with. But there was these seven-inning doubleheaders. They got them in. But it is a reminder that, you know, while there was a feel to stadiums being 20% full, 25% full, and whatnot, that you're going to still get these stories, that you're still going to get COVID turn this baseball game off. And here's the thing with baseball, because it's a daily thing, it's very hard to curtail it in a short period of time. We saw that last year. Remember in last year when, was it the Yankees played Toronto and then the Yankees had to shut down and the Blue Jays shut down and that affected their game against the Orioles. We were moving teams all over the place. The NFL had that issue. Major League Baseball could have that issue. I like the fact that we're going to be able to get a lot of games in this year, the full season in, and we're going around the country. We're not playing in a geographical area. But just a reminder that some of this virus could still kick in and wreck a baseball weekend. They are going to try to play on Saturday, and DeGrom and Scherzer will set to go at least try to get to go tomorrow. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.